a new day. Yes, it is.
For 12 Pack Radio. Get excited, y'all.
Welcome back, everyone, to 12 Pack Radio, your podcast source for Pac-12 football news, the home of the Beta Rank College Football Statistical Model. I'm not going to lie. This week sucks, but you should listen anyway. You should listen anyway because last week was super exciting. We're going to break down every game, massive matchups between the Pac-12 and the SEC, the Big Ten. And look, this conference is good. And I took it on the chin, Rob. I owe ye of little faith on my end in terms of this conference. It was really exciting to see multiple teams from the bottom to the top of the Pac-12, with a couple exceptions, looking at you, Oregon, stepping forward and really inserting their dominance on the week that we saw. So we're going to break down all of that. We're going to break down all the games here that are Power 5 teams. We're not going to break down the FCS stuff. I'm sorry. Well, we'll talk about your team and how they performed the previous week. But, Rob, looking back at this week, what did you think?
Oh, man. I mean, this is a great week for the conference. I mean, nearly everyone won. and then the teams that didn't win, I mean, at least had good showings, you know, against quality, you know, opponents. I mean, Arizona, it's bonkers to say Arizona should have won that game. I mean, like, yeah. they took Mississippi State on the road into overtime, minus 4 on turnovers, which is just stupid. You know, and look, like, Arizona State hung around with Oklahoma State for a little bit, but I mean, like, I figured they were kind of at the level that they were. I think Auburn's probably going to get smoked in SEC play. But Cal at least, you know, like, hung around with them.
I watched that most of that game.
Yeah.
It was a lot of running and very little action. You know, it was just like, you know, the friend that, you know, that's going to say, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And then he goes on vacation and he's asleep the whole time. Yeah. That's basically, like, it was just a lot of movement up and down the field. And then I'm looking at the score because, you know, I have that YouTube, you know, multiple screen thing now. So I had the sound, you know, shifting the sound back and forth. So the sound wasn't always on that Cal game, but I'm watching it and I'm just going, man, there's still only like less than 20 points have been scored in this game. And I've just seen a lot of, like, oh, and the crowd is cheering and a lot of stuff going on and Hugh Freeze is pumping his fists and it's still 13-7, you know,
just a stupid game. Yeah, it was. That was a real dumb game. I mean, truly, I mean, to your point, right? Like, it did feel like there was a lot of action for nearly nothing productive done. I mean, and like both quarterbacks had hideous games.
Yeah, but they hung. I mean, to your point, they hung in there, and I don't want to dump on Cal because there's a world where, you know, Hugh Freeze and one of the, like, I lost that pick, right? I think I took Auburn +7 on the podcast just because I thought Freeze would do enough to be able to scheme people open, and look, I mean, Cal was able to, and the thing we'll talk about, but, like, Cal was crossed the 50-yard line like 8 times. They were in, like, the 30-yard line like 5 times. They just could, I mean, they had chances to win that game, which speaks well because we thought Cal could suck. I mean, this is kind of one of those weeks where we're figuring out who is who and you know, how strong these teams are. I agree with you. I don't think Auburn's going to be all that good, but the fact that Cal was competitive, I think, is a good sign.
Yeah. And Utah, I mean, like, my takeaway for them is both Kyle Whittingham and Andy Ludwig, like, just cannot evaluate quarterbacks in practice. And, like, they really have to see people play in games to be able to decide what the pecking order should be for quarterbacks, because, like, I want to be clear, because I do think that, like, I mean, if people recall back, like, the 2017 season with Khalil Tate, like, there was a sector of Arizona fans that were like, oh no, like, it is Khalil Tate's arm that is opening things up. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This is Khalil Tate running the football that has opened up the offense. And that was it. It was Nate Johnson's ability to add in more of the run game that opened up more of the offense, forced Baylor to put a spy on him, focus more, like, and not play man. I mean, like, you know, play a lot of zone so they could keep an eye on him. And that opened up the passing game afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll break down each of these, but I really think as a whole, like, some of these teams pulled the game out of their rear end. I think Utah is one of them. Yeah. Although, like, you're right. The scheme of that game changed.
Yeah.
Oregon, absolutely. That we'll talk about that. The last thing, just to right, we're talking general impressions, then we'll get into the specific games. But that Colorado game, we'll talk about how that game could have gone very differently. But I was thrilled out of my mind with the second half adjustments that that team, like, just blew the doors off of them, and that is coaching. Yeah. And like that is. And it, like, right, we said about that line was 3, and I just wanted to respect the ocean, you know, like you just kind of, sometimes you're out on that ship and you just got to respect that 3 and say, all right, they're hanging this 3 for some reason.
Yeah.
And I was wrong. And looking back, like we said, that's probably the dumbest line probably of 2023 that we'll look back and see, hey, like, you know, Nebraska can't move the ball and Colorado's pretty good on offense. We've seen 2 games in a row where that team has been well coached. And that is, I think that's saying so much for a program that just is island of misfit toys that have just come together at the last second. And the fact that they got those guys playing, like, and now look, there's a lot of flaws. This team isn't going to go win 9 games, right. But that is super, super impressive. I was really impressed with what
I mean. Look, like they've gotten two wins against Power 5 competition. I mean, TCU, I think, is, you know, clearly come back to earth a little bit off of, and they were a little lucky last year too. And Nebraska's not, I mean, this is a little bit like the, you know, like I want to hand it to Cal. I also want to be clear that I don't think Auburn's going to be a very good football team this year. Like Nebraska is not a very good football team right now. But the fact that Colorado was able to push them around and make adjustments in the second half tells you that Colorado like is a darn sight better than where Nebraska is. Right. Like, and that I think is really impressive in this year. Like, I don't want, like, people also shouldn't overreact. People that in theory are college, like smart about college football, saying like, look at the adjustments Colorado's defense made week over week. And I was like, let's not kid ourselves. Like Nebraska's offense is hot garbage. And they played like it all game. I mean, Jeff Sims is not the answer. Clearly a quarterback.
No, not at all. And that cost them. We'll break down. I mean, that was a tale of two halves and what might have been.
Yeah.
But let's just start with, Oklahoma State 27, Arizona State 15. We'll talk about, there's only about 4 or 5 games where there's an actual line. Most of these are FCS schools versus Pac-12 schools. So we'll break down some of these. I watched the majority of this game, and I mean, this was also the tale of two halves. I mean, I think in the opening series, you had kind of some ugly back and forth between both teams, right? And Elijah Badger had a couple catches, but for the most part, you know, this game could have I took Oklahoma State and I took it purely on coaching. I mean, you know, I'm like, okay, Oklahoma State is not a great team and neither is ASU, but I just trust Gundy, and I think Gundy's going to be able to do enough to win the game. And that's really what happened. This game was like ASU was winning at the first half.
Right.
Emmett Bull, something to really keep in mind. Emmett Bull, I think it was their left or right tackle. He's out. And there really is, if you look at the depth chart for ASU, it is real rough in that second round of offensive linemen. And Isaiah Glass didn't play in this game either. So they were down 2 basically starting offensive linemen. And I think Bull's going to be out for the season. We'll take a look, but he was carted off and that seemed like it was the end for him. Second half though, right? Oklahoma State came back 17-0 to win that game. And it just seemed like they were able to click more. And the defense, I mean, just the defense for ASU, I think, is a problem. I mean, if you're giving up 27 to a bad Oklahoma State team and you can't score, like, you're not going to win a lot of games, Rob.
Right. I mean, that's a real problem for this team, because Arizona State was not in any way able to slow down what has been for the last couple seasons a pretty bad Oklahoma State offense, right? Like, it has been a long time since Oklahoma State was one of the best offenses in college football. And I mean, they played 3 quarterbacks. Oklahoma State was basically having quarterback tryouts during this game. You know, including, I think, the coach's kid.
Yeah, I was joking that it was facetious. Sometimes it's hard, you know, sarcasm is hard to read sometimes, where I'm like, you know, ASU's defense has caused a coaching change in this game. So yeah, I mean, you know, it's a little on the other side too. It wasn't just ASU, but yeah.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma State was able. I mean, they were more disciplined. They clearly have better depth. This is an Oklahoma State team that I think very easily could have a losing record in the Big 12 this year, though. I mean, so, you know, like it's I think this is another sign ASU kind of is where we thought they were, another sign was like BYU really stuck it to Southern Utah this weekend. If you saw that, that game was not close. ASU's probably more in line with what they thought. We thought they were going to be coming into the season. I know that there are some folks that were like, no, ASU's never good and they're never bad. And I'm like, I think this year they could be bad.
Yeah. And on the bright side with them, like Jaden Rashada, look, he didn't have a great game. That's not the bright side, right? He was about 50%, 160-70, threw a pick and a touchdown.
5.8.
I mean, I watched most of this. Yeah. But you saw, like, I get why they started him, because there were some real beautiful throws he was able to check. So I was like, okay, all right, at least I could see what could be in a couple of years, but it's certainly not this year. Look, it's a rebuild. Like, embrace it. Just if you're an ASU fan, and look, we could be wrong. I don't think we're wrong on this one, but take a look at the bright spots. Look at the emerging freshmen. Look at the players that are starting to really make a name for themselves, and look forward to the next. Like, I really don't want to dump on them too much, you know, because I feel bad about it. And they have a tough matchup coming up, Rob.
Yeah,
they play. They got Fresno State. They got them at home, and they're 1.5-point favorites. And you know, Fresno straight up went into West Lafayette and beat Purdue.
Yeah.
Right. This is a Jeff Tedford coach team. This is a buttoned up team that, you know, yes, they are a group of five, but this is going to be a tough matchup for an ASU team that's really finding itself and is down a couple offensive linemen. I'm pretty worried about them in this one.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I mean, Fresno State actually opened as the favorite in Vegas at Circa. They opened as a 1-point favorite in this game, and it swung back over. So clearly sharp money, you know, like Vegas came out with a line at 1, sharp money tends to move. If you're seeing movement in the line this early, it tends to be, you know, sharp bettors that have moved it, either that or somebody else opened the line. I mean, that's a tight line. So like, you know, you could easily swing it over to Arizona State. Betarank has this as a true toss up, right? Like between these two. So it was one of those, there are a handful where there's divergence, but most of the lines came out very close to the naive spread this week. And this is one of them. It was just right on. I mean, like Fresno State right now, I mean, their offense last season was pretty good for a group of five team, 44 overall in Betarank. They're really good throwing the football, number 29, an effective pass. ASU's defense, which you talked about, is a bit of a problem. They were at 111 on defense last season in Betarank, 86 an effective pass. I mean, that's like, I mean, when you think about like, so your sort of like main concern coming into this game, it is on defense. Like they had a good, for a group of five team, Fresno had a really good defense last year, 53 overall in Betarank. And they were much better against the pass than they were against the run, 33 in effective pass last season. Now Fresno did have that really good game against Purdue. I mean, like Purdue's like kind of a little bit of a wait and see. They clearly have a new coach for a reason. I mean, like now their old coach who, you know, like I think people thought was doing okay, decided to go back to Louisville, which is where he went to school. But, you know, they got a new coaching staff in place. You know, Tedford's a sharp coach. I mean, this is another one of those ones where like, it's not, I mean, this is, Tedford's been back for a couple seasons. He's got a good coaching staff, you know, in place. Suddenly I'm like, did he get another transfer quarterback in? Like, this is something I got to suddenly look up. And of course, like that CFB stats like slows down right at this moment when I'm like, let's look it up.
Well, while you're doing that, I just want to highlight, I think they're weak at corner.
Yeah.
And Roe Torrance, like I watched a lot of this game, and I don't think Roe Torrance is very good. I just like he's their JUCO All-American that they were like penciling him in as he's a returning starter. Oh. I'm like, oh, that's good or not.
So I mean, Mikey Keene hasn't been bad for them at Fresno. He's at 65% completion percentage, which is where you want to be in modern college football, 7.1 per. He's got 6 touchdowns and only 2 interceptions. That's not he's not doing too bad. You know, for them, I, this is one of those ones where it's like, I tend to lean a little Fresno, but I mean, I say that, but like, then they went out and almost lost to Eastern Washington.
Oh no.
So
yeah, that's why
it's like, I mean, so they're like 74 in Betarank. I mean, Keene had a real good day against Purdue. You know, 4 TD passes, you know, against Purdue, and Purdue's got Ryan Walters as the head coach. So we expect the defense to at least be pretty well coached. I don't know that they're going to have like the full turnaround this season. You know, but like the game last week, they turned the ball over a bunch. This is stuff I should have looked up beforehand. My apologies. No, they finished plus on turnovers. They just, man, Eastern Washington can be a problem sometimes. But this is a real tough one. I think the money swinging over to Fresno is a sign. I mean, like, a sign that, like, you know, like, more bettors are in on, more sharp money's in on Fresno. I think people, I don't think there's a lot of faith. To your point, like, I don't think there's a lot of faith in that, in this game in particular. Like, Fresno's going to throw it around in Arizona State's ability to stop it.
Well, we talked about this last week in terms of Jaden Rashada. He's probably going to throw a pick, and he did.
Yeah.
I think he's going to throw a pick in this game. Like, he's a true freshman that's playing football at a very high level, and it's tough. It's tough to do that. Didn't see a lot of his legs on the ground, right? He's mostly trying to sling back in the pocket. And I think that can be a problem. Now, he has Elijah Badger, and like, there's a couple other good wide receivers on that team, but it's possible that they are able to move the ball to some extent. My worry is twofold. The first is, again, down two linemen. ASU, for the most part, I mean, particularly last year, wanted to lean on the run. And I think it's going to be more and more difficult as you see more and more injuries pack up on that front. Like, Cam Scatabo, like the Sac State transfer, is like decent, and they have some okay people back there. But, you know, stack the box, make Badger beat you, make Rashada beat you, and try to put up some points. So, I'll take Fresno State. I'm curious to see this, because it's possible that they're able to get some points through the air in terms of ASU, but I think ASU is going to give up some points here, and that will likely be the end of them in this game. So I'll lay the, let's see, I'm trying to remember if they're favored or, ASU is the favorite. I'll take the 1.5. Like, let's go.
ASU is the favorite. Yeah. I'll take Fresno here too.
Okay. So the next game we have up is, let's get the Arizona schools out of the way here to start. So look, I didn't have the eyes on this game as much. Like, so if you watch this, feel free to take the reins here. Right. So, it was bonkers. I mean, I have the stats, and I think sometimes when we take a look at the, if you're just caught stat counting, it can be a problem. Right. So Mississippi State 31, Arizona 24. I cracked open this one. I ended up focusing more on Oregon and UCLA. And I was like, oh, snap. Okay. All right. Jaden Delora, 324. That's pretty good. Two touchdowns. Holy smokes, four interceptions. This is why we took Mississippi State, right? We're like, in no world will we accept Jaden Delora goes into an SEC school and plays well. Four picks, and they still took this to overtime, Rob. I mean, like, what on earth happened in this game? Oh, my God.
It's not just four picks. He started out the game with three consecutive interceptions.
Oh, my
God. And it has to be. I mean, and this is like, I mean, we watched Jed Fish stick with Gunnar Cruz. Like, I mean, like, Jed Fish will just keep running you out there, apparently. So, like, I was like, there's no way after three straight interceptions that, like, you don't run out the other quarterback. There has to be consequences. Yeah. And there were none. So Arizona put themselves in a massive hole, and it looked like it was just over. And it was like, all right, like, here we go. You know, like, I think they were already down like 14-0. And then, like, Mississippi's, like, I will say Arizona's defense, like, I don't think Mississippi State's new offensive coordinator is great. Like, they sincerely wanted to run the football a lot. And actually,
after recruiting for the air raid for like 3 years. So yeah.
Smart, like, real. So, like, they kept saying on the broadcast, like, you're going to turn to your all-time SEC completions leader at some point, right? Like, to tell them to go out and win the game. And, like, they never did. Like, it was just, like, they really tried to run it. And I got to give credit to Arizona's defensive line. They were actually pretty good. Like, Bill Norton was a problem in the game. Like, the interior defensive line in particular, like, played pretty well. They forced Mississippi State to punt quite a bit. I should also say, Delora also had, like, one of his truly stupid plays where he's, like, running around like a crazy man. and he wings it out to Jacob Cowing, like on the, like, and it's this weird pass and it's almost a lateral and he's like running full speed at the line of scrimmage when he does it. And like Cowing's like kind of like having to adjust to catch the ball and he gets his feet down and establishes possession just in time to get popped and fumble the football. So like you, at this point you have four turnovers that are pretty much your quarterback's fault.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And then in the second half, so then like Arizona gets a late score in the, at the end of the first half on the dumbest, like, I don't know if you saw this. This is one of the most amazing, I'm sorry. Like if you're not like, if you didn't watch this, you should go watch this. Delora basically, like, they were going to spike the ball. They had gotten the ball down to like the one. They're going to run the spike play. There's like 15 seconds left. Delora takes the snap, doesn't spike it, but he didn't tell anyone, and he just decided to sneak it himself.
Oh, wow.
Right? and then, like, as, like, the center and everybody else figure out what he's doing, like, they start pushing, too, and they get credit for the touchdown because they called the touchdown on the field, but there's, like, no video evidence that Delora ever actually got into the end zone. But it just held up. So Arizona, despite the fact that they at this point are down -4 on turnovers, goes in, because the defense actually played pretty well, down only a touchdown into the second half. And then, like, Delora throws another pick after, like, they get back close. But, like, he was resilient. Like, you got to give him credit. Like, outside of the four interceptions and that he was basically responsible for a fumble, he had a really good game. And
like, he's a volume shooter.
Both weeknight and weekend Rajon Rondo all in one. And so he like gets them all the way back. They get it close, like all the way down and like tie it up. I was in shock because I was like flipping back and forth between the Texas Alabama game. And I was like, yeah, like there's some life in them, but there's no way. And then I was like, oh my God, there's a way. And in overtime, Arizona just like couldn't. But like the fact that, I mean, look, Mississippi State had a top 10 defense last year. Zach Arnett is still there. Yeah. Arizona's guys got, I mean, like, look, Delora did some dumb stuff. The offensive line played really well. Like the positives for Arizona are legion in this game. Like there are a ton of like really good things that you could show and be like, oh, there was real improvement. Like the offensive line and the running backs blocked well. Delora had plenty of time. But like, oh my God, like all of that was erased by being -4 on turnovers.
I think if you're a Pac-12 team that isn't Oregon, USC, well, probably just Oregon, USC at this point, maybe Utah. I have to go back and look and see who Arizona plays. Delora won't play this poorly in terms of the picks all the time. Like he tends to do this in areas where the microscope's on him. He feels like he needs to do more than he needs to. But I mean, for every game here, you have Delora that's going to throw 3 touchdowns and a pick, have 320 yards, and he's going to have some on the ground. And if Arizona's defense is better, this is a this team will not win the Pac-12.
No.
But this is a team that if you're UCLA, Oregon State, Colorado, I mean, this is now a team where you're looking at at Arizona going, oh crap, we have to play them, which is great for the conference. I'm yeah. excited to
oh,
see.
Oh no, Arizona is like Arizona, like you are good for probably like 2 Jane Delora induced losses more.
Yeah.
Beyond the one that he just caused at Mississippi State. There are 2 multi-interception games lurking out there to happen at a TBD time. But then like I thought the main takeaway for this, like, which is bad, I mean, like, which is I think like whereas like look, Auburn, you know, Auburn's not gonna be that great. They're gonna get like they may hang with Alabama because it's like Auburn and that's just the way college football works, no matter how bad all of Auburn is. It's like they'll hang around with Alabama this year, but like they're gonna lose multiple SEC games by 30 points this year. Like Oklahoma State there's no way they have a winning record in the Big 12 this season. Like Mississippi State's good. Like they're probably going to be like 4-5 in the SEC, but they're still a really good football team. And like Arizona went out and like frankly should have won the game and showed improvement in all phases. Like yeah. That I think is an like if we're like heading into this is like that makes this fun. Like now it's going to be the Jaden Delora roller coaster, out there. But Arizona is suddenly like a fun team that could like change the Pac-12 race with an unexpected upset.
They have UTEP coming up. They're a 17.5-point favorite.
And that started at 16. That's come up.
Yeah, that's that. They put some respect on the mouths. Yeah, right. The names of Arizona players.
They're like, there's no way Delora throws four picks again.
Yeah, that's true. How bad is UTEP? Because I think the worry here, because I'm want to take the point or to lay the points here. My worry is big game. You take a loss. You get back home. You come out sleepy, right? Because you're preparing for conference season. But I mean, Arizona has the team to be able to cover this if UTEP is as bad as I recall. But where are they at this point?
So UTEP, I mean, so right now, like UTEP, they finished at 97 overall last season in Beta Rank. This season, they're at 101. They just got hammered by a very bad Northwestern team, 38-7. Now, like the one thing to watch out with them is Gavin Hardison, their quarterback. Look, they're not. They're not going to be good, but Hardison, if he gets hot, he's got an NFL arm. Now he's clearly at UTEP for a reason, even though he's got a cannon for an arm. But like if he gets hot, like UTEP could put up some points against Arizona. But I fully expect like Beta Rank has this much closer because we're mostly still on the projection data still. I think Vegas is much further along on where Arizona is. Beta Rank has this at 9.5. I think that this is probably closer to that 16-17 point range. Like, I think that's probably fair. And if Delora has a really good game, you know, like his receivers are going to be way open. You know, Arizona's running backs are going to run really well in this game. I mean, the fact that like Northwestern, who for years has been synonymous with terrible offense, put up 38 against UTEP. You know, now there were three UTEP turnovers in there, but like, you know, like Northwestern had themselves a decent game. They had 10.4 per completion or per pass, and they ran for 4.7 against UTEP. But this UTEP defense is going to give up a lot of points, and Arizona's got a good offense. I actually like Arizona to probably win by a 21.
Yeah, I'll lay them. I think this team is better still than they're getting. Although they did get the respect in that Mississippi State game. I mean, 9 points was not a large spread for a bottom on paper, a bottom Pac-12 team going on the road into a top 10 defense. I'll lay them though. I'm just trying. I mean, I know this team is the team I know mostly better than any other Pac-12 team. And like, I think they're in a better spot. And like, look, if UTEP comes back and like smacks them, I would almost take that as a, an opportunity to buy low. Like I think this team is better than it's been in past years. And that's great. That's good to see.
I mean, this feels like one of those, like last year there were any number of reasons Arizona could have lost a football game, often starting with like a very, very bad defense. And look, the defense probably still is pretty bad, but they're not nearly as bad as they were. It looks like, and it's probably more at this point, like, you know, it's the question of like if Arizona is going to cover or not, it's going to be Delora.
Yeah. We've been doing this for 5 years, Rob. I've never done worse than like 54% against the spread. It's been a rough, like I'm not used to the Pac-12 actually coming out and exceeding expectations. So I got to.
Last week was rough. I'm trying. Really rough.
It was tough. Let's get to. Well, I want to talk Colorado because that game was bonkers and fun and awesome, and I was really excited to watch it. Let's get to that and Oregon and other teams right after this.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Okay, let's get this over with in the best way possible, right? Colorado on a national television with the good cameras. One of the things that I've been I'm looking forward to maybe in the future is to see the difference in camera quality. Like you go from Colorado, right? And it's Colorado, Nebraska, Fox, National, yeah. Big lights, great, you know, and then you go to UCLA, San Diego State, and it looks like it was recorded with an iPhone camera, you know.
Was that game on ESPN? Yeah.
The UCLA State game?
Yeah.
I think so. And it was just a poor, it just didn't pop. There were multiple games this week that popped weird. There's one game where you could hear the reverb, like, or the feedback in the microphone. You could tell either they weren't at the game or they were at the game with poor quality. Anyway, this game was awesome. This game was the opposite of that. Like the mics were great, the colors were great, the game was great. Colorado 36, Nebraska 14. I want to plant my flag here. There is in the multiverse of college football, there are many options where Nebraska wins this because they came out really strong. They were able to move the ball on the ground and they should have been winning this game and in control of the game in terms of like clock management, in terms of pushing Colorado around. And again, I'm going to go to the good parts of this, right? Because like, again, like we said in the beginning, there are so many good things to talk about with Colorado, but if Sims, their quarterback, knows how to field a snap,
yeah,
right? They're winning at halftime and they're in control in the second half. Now that didn't happen and the crowd was great and Sims got rattled and Colorado took full advantage and won. And they smoked them in the second half. Yeah. That was super fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you're a Colorado fan, like you should be really excited. You're going to start out 3-0 too, because Colorado State's garbage. I can't believe, like, I mean, that's how bad a slate it is this week and overall in college football that like, game day, or like, I think both game day and Big Noon wanted to go to Colorado because it's this week's Colorado State, the Rocky Mountain Showdown. Like Colorado State, as we saw against Washington State, is god awful. But like Colorado, like put it to Nebraska, and look, I mean, like Nebraska's gonna lose a ton of Big Ten games, right? Like they're bad, but this isn't one where it's like, oh, but it was close, right? Like, and it's like a close win. Like this wasn't close in the end, and that I think is like shows like how much progress Colorado's made, right? Like they're not eking out a win. Like this is something like Colorado is a couple possessions better than Nebraska, and yes, there is a multiverse here where like, you know, like Jeff Sims, like, does, you know, Nebraska does some right things because they do. Nebraska does have some talented players, but they're clearly not a complete team. I don't think Colorado is a complete team yet either. And I don't think, like, I think the watch out for Colorado, we're not going to see it here. We're going to have to wait for Oregon, which is going to be, I mean, like, that game is going to be bonkers, like, the lead up to that. Like, Dion versus Shu University is like you cannot but Colorado was able to go out, like, I mean, shut down a really, really bad Nebraska offense, right? Like, and they were able to this was an offense that fundamentally struggled against Minnesota, you know, and they struggled even more against Colorado. And I think the hard thing for Nebraska is, I mean, it's like, once the pressure gets on, once Colorado hits some, like, gets ahead, like, Colorado is sort of designed to play from ahead, right? Like, the defense probably isn't great. You want your opponent feeling the pressure from what the offense is doing, and then they might make mistakes. And, like, in Nebraska just kept making mistake after mistake after mistake once the pressure hit them. Yeah, I mean, Colorado played really smart, disciplined football for the most part, too. Like, I mean, like, there's a ton to like about this Colorado team. And there's no negatives. Like, when we, like, I know if you're a Colorado fan, it's like all birthday cake with extra icing, right? You're like, this is so much better than, like, we thought we were going to be, right? So, like, I get it. Like, you're, like, you know, like, when we try to figure out how good they are, like, which is part of what we got to do, you know, it's like trying to figure out what their ceiling is. And I don't know that we fully know what their ceiling is. I mean, we're certainly going to figure it out against Oregon because we're going to figure out where this defense is for sure in that game. Now, where Oregon's defense is another question.
I think the thing with Colorado, and we touched on this in the beginning, but I just love when teams come out in the second half and it's a totally new game. Yeah. And that's what this looked like. I mean, Colorado had a plan. They moved the ball. I think they understood that Nebraska was could run the ball on them, and they went out and they hit them in the mouth in terms of being able to gun down the field.
Yeah.
So that the Nebraska had to change. Like, Nebraska wasn't as aggressive on the ground. As I recall, I watched this whole game. It's possible that they, but the way that, I recall it happening was Colorado comes out and they're scoring, and it just really forced Nebraska to panic. And that's what you needed to do, because when you take a look at the box score, right, they gave up like 222 yards rushing to Nebraska. Again, Colorado couldn't run the ball. They rushed for like 88 yards, right? But it didn't matter, because they were throwing the ball down the field and they played their game. And they looked, for the most part, at, like, the other thing to flag is 8 sackles for a loss. Nebraska was able to rack up on Colorado.
That's a lot. That's, like, they got, I mean, that offensive line, like, I mean, look, like, when Sanders wasn't getting hit, he was doing amazing things and guys were often running free, but holy moly, right? Like, that, I mean, now look, like, the big, you know, the Pac, you know, the Pac 12 does not have, like, we've talked about this many a time, like, a murderer's row of defenses, you know, or defensive lines, but some of them have gotten better. You know, and if Colorado is going to have to sit back there and throw all day, like, you know, teams like Oregon and USC are still going to get after them, you know, like, and they don't have to play Utah till the end of the year. But, like, man, Sanders is going to take some hits in that Utah game.
Yeah.
like Lander Barton, just pencil this in that I said this, like, Lander Barton on a Green Dog blitz. Like, coming
out. Like. But to their credit, right, we know their flaws, and this staff knows their flaws. Yeah. Like, they're super aware of this. So the fact that they knew that and they went into the second half and they just whooped up on Nebraska, playing their game, setting their tempo, leaning into what made them good. I'm just so, like, I'm so impressed. I love when a coaching staff really, like, has things on a platter for their team and puts them in a position to be excellent. And they were excellent in that second half. Now they have Colorado State. I was a little,
and Sean Lewis is good. Their offensive coordinator that they hired over, he's a really good offensive mind. This is by far the most talent he's probably ever had. And Sanders at quarterback is phenomenal.
Yeah, he is. He, like, is.
I mean, he's the real deal.
Yeah. But so they have Colorado State. Colorado State is bad.
Very bad.
This line is 19.5. I know. See, this is the problem, Rob. It's like, how many, I've looked at this line. I've looked now. The 21, right? I took Colorado at the 21 because I think I'm going to take the 19.5, knowing that it's the square pick, and it's the same reason that I took Colorado in the first game against TCU. It's because they want Sanders to get the Heisman. He's not going to get it, but I think they step on the gas and they give zero craps about what quarter it is. And they rack up. I think they want to make a statement going into Pac-12 play. I don't think they take their foot off the gas pedal, and this Colorado State team is bad. I say this knowing all of the flaws. We just talked about all the flaws for Colorado. There's a world where they start reading their press clippings. You know, they take this week off to prepare for Oregon. I think that's the, if they don't cover, that's the reason why they kind of just, I don't know if they do that.
No, I mean, and Cam Ward lit them up. I mean, right. Like, Cam Ward lit up Colorado State. Colorado State was as bad as Colorado last year. Like, Colorado finished at 127 in beta rank. Colorado finished at 126. But clearly they didn't reload and hire Deion. So, I mean, it's a much longer reload cycle for Colorado State. I'm going to take Colorado in this game because I don't think Deion has any, I think this is all somehow really personal to him. Like, I fundamentally believe, like, they're just going to run up the score any chance they get.
The thing that worries me, I mean, like, it's the not taking the team, not taking this game seriously, preparing for Oregon, which I don't think is the case. They might not be able to run the ball, but Colorado State doesn't, it's not like they're playing Nebraska. Like, I think they rush the ball for 90 yards minimum in this game, just because they will. And they'll be able to throw the ball everywhere. And look, I don't trust their defense very much, but I mean,
this,
I guess,
Colorado walkover.
Yeah.
I mean, Norvell's got a decent coaching staff at Colorado State that he brought over from Nevada. He's got Hal Mumme's kid as his offensive coordinator. But, like, they have just a huge hole to dig out personnel-wise.
They could rush the football and try to run clock, so that's the other thing. I mean,
but they're air raid. Like,
oh, yeah, that's All right. Yeah.
Like, no, like Hal Mummy's kid is.
Yeah. What am I talking about? Rushing the ball? I'm just an idiot.
I mean, maybe, like, you never know. Like, maybe they just hit a point where they're like, you know what? Let's just get this over with. Like, let's just take a knee.
All right. Let's do this Oregon game. Just a tasty, delicious cover at the end. I mean, the pick six to go up by seven.
Undeserved cover.
Oh, it's so ridiculous. Oregon 38, Texas Tech 30. Texas Tech had this game. I mean, like, it was pretty much not in the bag, but they needed to lose it, and they did. Bo Nix, 32-44, 350 plus, yards, two touchdowns. He had 46 on the ground. But he did have that Bo Nix moment where he threw that awful, that was a pick. He threw a pick in the end zone and they did not call it a pick. And I was like, I was happy that they did it, but right.
That was bad.
We came back from like commercial. Like, wait, what? They gave them the ball. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Gave it back to him. Look, they gave up some points. We saw some weakness here for Oregon and we knew it. I did think that the defensive line was stronger than they've been in the past. They were able to get some pressure on Texas Tech.
Yeah.
At the same time, I mean, now if you look at the box score, it says three interceptions, but two of those were in the fourth quarter. Like you had the pick six, and I think he threw another interception at the end. I have to go back and look. I watched most of this game, so it's misleading.
But the game was tight, right? Like it's not like all those interceptions all count.
Yeah, yeah. It was more just. If it wasn't like the Arizona game where, Texas Tech found itself in a hole and then.
Right.
And then
I guess what it is, though, is like, I mean, that can check because like Oregon put up 20 of their points in the fourth quarter. Oregon does not come back without those picks.
Yeah.
That's the part where Oregon need like, and I say this, like, look, people should be aware. Texas Tech was kind of sneaky good. They often they were like Diet Coke Texas. Like, so Texas last year was like sneaky good and like good on like 80% of their drives and then would do stupid things the other 20%. Texas Tech would do good things on like 70% of their drives and do really stupid things the other 30%. But like, they were clearly heading in like a good direction with Joey McGuire. Last year. And so like, I mean, people should be aware, like this Texas Tech team is pretty good. They're going to cause people some trouble in the Big 12. Like this wasn't just like Oregon went to like Oklahoma State or somebody like that. Right. But Oregon needed plus three on turnovers in order to win this game. Like,
well,
that
I want to plant the flag here. Those last two So two of the three picks were in the last 35 seconds of the game. Okay. So there's one. There's like,
so we'll count
and the last
one.
Pick
plus
was the back.
We'll say plus two on turnovers.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Okay.
I think that's
but I mean, plus two on turnovers is still pretty substantial, right? Like Texas Tech, if they don't turn the ball, like if they're even on turnovers, wins this game. Now they're at home, right? What I want to say with this is like, if you're Oregon, that on its own, even though you went out and you beat a good team, is a concern because you're basically Texas Tech is equal, like on a neutral field. That's not where you want to be if you're Oregon.
I was shocked at the lack of production on the ground from Bucky Irving.
Oh man, Texas Tech got him.
Yeah. Now he had 50 yards receiving, and so it was interesting because I was watching him, and I'm going, I watched almost all of this game. I think I missed like the first 5 to 6 minutes of it, and I was focused on Irving because I like Irving. I think he's a good player, but on the ground, I was just, 11 for 38. I mean, that was his line and it showed. Yeah. Like I was watching this going, man, they can't run the football. Now 46 they on paper they ran for 113 yards. On paper, 46 of those came from Bo Nix.
Yeah.
So you're looking at 18 for 50 from Whittington and Irving. And that is worrisome.
Yeah. I mean, because everyone talks about like the strength of Oregon is still the offensive line, right? Like man, it's not like Texas Tech has like the world's greatest defensive lineman that they've recruited. like you don't have a bunch of 4 and 5 stars out there in Lubbock. And DeRoeder's he didn't do well at Oregon, but for the most part, he's been a pretty good DC in his career. And like he showed up with a plan to make Bo Nix win the game. Bo Nix eventually did, but this Texas Tech defense really shut down the Oregon run game. That's probably like there's probably two concerns if you're an Oregon fan out of this game. One is like, yes, like they they got the running game shut down. The other of which is like Tyler Shuck outside the interceptions had himself a game. Like, now he wasn't super effective on his completion percentage, but like, man, he ran the ball a lot. Himself putting up 100 yards, you know, rushing the football. And he's not exactly like Mr. Wheels, right? Like, if you're Oregon suddenly looking and you're under like, oh, you know, like, oh, wait, we've got Caleb Williams on the schedule. Like, that sounds fun, right? Like,
now he broke one for 58. Yeah. So if you, you know, like, and look, explosive plays count. Yeah, so just, yeah. There's a couple things where, and this was a problem. I want to say it was for Oregon. It was certainly the problem for USC. Remember when we were like, oh no, USC can't cover mobile quarterbacks, right, and yeah, lo and behold, they could not. So let's plant a flag here. I want to see, or like, let's take a look and see. I'm just flagging that to see what we got in the future, because they're going to run into a couple quarterbacks like this, yeah, that are much more effective at running the ball.
And Texas Tech, I don't think has like great. I mean, like, look, Shuck is slightly better, it feels like, than when he was at Oregon. Like, I don't think Tyler Shuck has made a ton of progress from the Tyler Shuck that we know and love from his days at Oregon. But that said, like, I mean, like, I think that there is a like, Oregon had the least bad of the bad defense, good offense mix in the Pac-12 last season. I think there's a chance that they have made progress. I think that the fact that they were able to get pressure on Shuck. I mean, like, Texas Tech's quarterbacks made horrible decisions last year. That was like the 30%, like, was usually them throwing picks. And they had tons of injuries, so there was like three of them that each took turns throwing picks. I'd like for this Oregon defense, I'd like to see them again against a really good, you know, we haven't seen them against a really good offense. I'd like to get to see them against a really, and we're going to get that in Colorado, and get an idea, because like Sanders, that's the matchup, right? Like, Sanders against this Oregon secondary, can Oregon, because you can get pressure on Sanders, can Oregon, right? Like, I feel like we're skipping ahead on this game. Oregon's got Hawaii. Like, Oregon's gonna win by a lot, probably.
Yeah, I mean, like, so a couple more things to mention in this game, because I want to give Oregon credit, right? Like,
yeah,
Texas Tech is not an easy place to play. We talked about it, like, going to the moon, basically going to Lubbock. They played a team that had a good offense, and you highlighted that they had a good offense. And I think a lot of Oregon fans are like, oh, we should smoke Texas Tech. And you didn't, because they had a good offense and you still don't have a great defense. Like, I just, yeah, just please, for the love of God, know that.
Right.
But they were, like, you know, we talked about the pressure. They were able to get in the backfield. They had 4 sacks, 6 tackles for a loss here. The thing I want to flag is, I was watching this with 4 kids running around. And I marked mentally at least 3, possibly 4 just awful plays from their defensive back. He was the transfer from Alabama.
Okay.
There was a targeting call that was inexplicable. There was a play where Shuck throws the ball up in the air, and it's like he's gunning it, right? He's throwing like one of those McDonald's arches, and 5, I forget, I think it's Jackson, just smokes the receiver, like, just smoke. And then 3 seconds later, the ball comes down. I mean, it was so bad and so ridiculous. And then he had a really bad pass interference call. And I think there was a 4th. So if he's if he's starting for you, I think there's a problem in that secondary, because he was bad.
Your secondary was horrible last year. That's the problem. I mean, with this, like, if you're going to have faith in this Oregon team, is like, they've got Colorado, which we wouldn't have said before the season, but like, yeah, Colorado's going to sling it. You know, they've got Arizona, which, again, like, Arizona's probably going to lose that game, but you turn the ball over and you might not win that one. You got Washington. You got USC, right?
Yeah. And
I think they got Utah still, too. I mean, like,
that's overs.
Right. I mean, yeah, not a lot of defense. I mean, other than the Utah game, maybe not a lot of defense. But like, that's the concern, is like, again, if you look across the Pac-12, it's not like you're going to face a bunch of teams that just are going to like run it up the gut at you and like do you a favor, you know?
Yeah. So they have they're laying 37 against Hawaii. I think they cover that. I just, like, I watched Stanford. I watched that whole game.
Yeah.
And now Stanford's quarterback was out. It didn't matter. It didn't, like, that, yeah, that was a stupid, like, that Stanford team. I want to go back and look at Hawaii versus Vanderbilt, right? Cause we have to do all these web connections here. And, Stanford looks so out of place. Yeah. Like, so awful in the secondary. And they couldn't run the football. They melted down in the second half of that game. They just mentally collapsed. But if they beat Hawaii, I think Hawaii's really bad. I'll lay the 37. They put those billboards up in Dallas and New York for a reason, and they need to step by it now, because I was kind of laughing that they were doing that. I'm like, wow, you put a lot of money into Bo Nix, and here he is now in Texas Tech losing a football game. And then I went back and looked at the stats. I'm like, okay, it's salvageable.
Yeah.
But
I mean, look, he's going to have a big game. The question is how much he plays.
That's true. Ty Thompson is garbage. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't mean to speak ill. I might take that out and post, but he's not there. We're on live.
We're
TV
on live
now.
On YouTube. So the audience at home is getting that take. I'm going to take Hawaii because I just think that's a lot of points for Oregon. And I think they are going to sit next at least a chunk of it.
Yeah.
I think they're going to get up so big, so fast that I think Ty Thompson and whomever's number three are going to get some snaps in this game. And I think that I think they're going to get up early, and I think that they're going to run away with this. And then I think they're going to rest guys because they got Colorado.
That's a good call.
I mean, it's a tough one because there's definitely a world where this gets completely out of hand, and it gets completely out of hand early enough that they have Bo Nix in there still because they want to get him reps.
Yeah, I'm looking at I'm doing the math right now, right? Because this could get 56-7, 56-14, and they still cover.
Mm-hmm.
But that would require significant. I'm gonna do it, but I'm gonna wait for that number to bump up a little bit more, and I'll probably be on Hawaii by the time kickoff comes.
So bad last week. It's why not? I mean, it's not like.
It's funny because on the totals, I was in really good shape, just personally. I think the move here is to look at what the team total is for Oregon.
Yeah.
That's likely the move. Cause I don't trust, here's the things I don't trust. I don't trust Hawaii's offense. I don't trust Oregon's defense. I trust Oregon's offense. And if that number is more than, if it's 45, I'm probably taking the over.
Yeah.
I just think that they're going to drop a whole lot of points in this game. So give me Oregon. I can't believe I'm laying this much, but I just think that they're going to try to turn up the tables. And looking back, we'll see what we'll see. Speaking of getting up really, really big and then not doing anything in the second half at all, let's talk about USC and Stanford. And I'm angry about this. I had the over 70. 52 points were scored in the first half. And here's my commitment to you, dear listener. I was doing the prep for the show and not paying attention at the very end of the USC game. And I totally missed my window to place the under on the second half of this USC-Stanford game, knowing that Miller Moss was coming in. And I do not believe, Rob, that Miller Moss is a good quarterback. Good for him. He's getting his master's degree or whatever at USC. I was pretty furious that they didn't put in the young kid, right? They have another five-star guy. And it was Miller Moss throwing the same route multiple times to the freshman tight end. And that's it. He was the Devo of college football quarterbacks. He had one hit and that's all he did. And it didn't matter. USC blew the doors off. A couple things that I learned from this. First of all, the thing we already knew is let's put that on steroids, which is Stanford's secondary is really,
really bad.
Awful. USC could have scored 100 points in this game. Legitimately could have done that if they really wanted to, if they kept Williams in. That was how bad the second, these wide receivers were open consistently. The second thing that jumped out for me was, man, that offensive line is rough for Stanford. They could not run the ball. They had four, possibly multiple, even more than that, false start penalties. And they just could not protect anybody. I mean, this was a mess. Now, Austin Jones was out in the first quarter. Well, I don't know, maybe because the offensive line sucked. So they tried three different quarterbacks in this game, basically, and it just didn't matter. They couldn't move the football, and it was pretty rough. Did you catch any of this?
I caught some of in particular, Caleb Williams was having himself a highlight reel day. Making stupid throws in this game. It was
near total domination in this game. I mean, but it was one of those ones too, where like Stanford's defense is clearly so bad that as soon as it got out of hand, like the pressure just flipped over and there's no way Stanford was going to be able to keep up. Like as soon as it was clear that USC was going to score nearly every time they had the football, it was over. Right. Like that. Yeah. And then there was no way Stanford could even attempt to follow along and keep up. And like that was it.
They were a broken man. Yeah. Like by the second half of the second quarter, they were just broken mentally, like broken Matt Hardy.
Do basically. Not kick to Zachariah Branch. I don't understand. Like kick it out of bounds. I don't know what people were, what that was. Like what were you?
They were down 39 in the first half. On the USC 49 or therefore it was on the 49 yard line, down 39, and they had it was like fourth and two, and they kicked the ball. I'm like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, why? I mean, you have nothing to lose. I was like, David Shaw? Did David Shaw like do you know in beer pong you have like a guest appearance and the guy shoots the ball once and then he leaves? That was like David Shaw making his call. I think that the only other thing we don't have to. I think USC fans will want us to talk about the defense. Good job.
Congrats on shutting down a very bad Stanford offense. I refuse. Yeah. This is like playing an FCS team. Like if you would like an orange slice after.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, and they were all in on this broadcast. There was multiple Alex Grinch. He's pumping fists. They stopped Stanford at the 2 yard line. Well, they stopped it because there was a false start penalty, and then they were back at the 7. And he's pumping, and they got people got rallied up, and everybody's cheering on the sideline. Like, you look. I'm sure the defense is a little better, but y'all need to really prove that. Yeah, I'm with you. I just let's calm down there. And then the last thing, because this was a total blowout. The difference between. Now, USC didn't have a lot to play for, too, but the difference between Caleb Williams as the quarterback for USC, between him and Miller Moss as quarterback, and look, they pulled a lot of the ones, but man, that is a wide, wide gap. I'm curious to see what USC looks like next year with another quarterback. It'll be good.
It's Malachi Nelson. That's the kid, right? Like, I mean, he is... Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm surprised he's not getting reps, to be honest. Like, I don't know why they're giving Miller Moss reps. Unless that, like, they really need Nelson to, like, have the offense more down before they, you know, like, hand the keys over to him as the backup. But, like, USC's not, I mean, like, they've got a week off, and then they've got Arizona State, and then they get Colorado, come on down. Like, Colorado's going to tell, like, that's the game we're going to find out about, like, all right, where USC's defense really is.
Yep. Stanford has Sacramento State. I don't think that they were as bad as, because again, like you meant, they just totally collapsed on themselves. Like they're not this bad, but the secondary is like, and look, I mean that is a stacked wide receiving core, but guess what has stacked wide receiving cores all up and down the nearly conference, everyone. The Pac-12. So just keep that in mind. Let's talk Wazoo. Another big win, man. Like
this
so,
this one was like real. This one was not like last year we were there and it was like, it just sort of felt like held together by like dreams and like, you know, like packaging, like packaging tape. Like this one was quite real.
Cam Ward, 20 for 32, 212, got it done on the ground, 43 yards rushing. Lincoln Victor, maybe he's good. I don't know. We'll have to see. This is the second game in a row where like Lincoln Victor like had a touchdown and was able to get a lot of reception. So look, I could be wrong on him. 10 receivers caught a pass. He was slinging it all over the place. Yeah. And I mean, the defense,
also call out like Washington State was plus 3 on turnovers too. So it was, I mean, it was real ish, you know, like they, but the, like the fact that they were like, I think Wisconsin's going to be a decent team this year. The fact that they were able to hold Wisconsin's rushing largely in check and like force them to throw the ball, like that was amazing. Cause like Wisconsin, like we talked about in the preview, like Longo does actually really like to run the football and has a pretty good run scheme. And like the fact that they were able to largely shut down Wisconsin's run game was impressive.
Yeah, that was a big deal. And now, a couple things to flag. 4 sacks, 9 tackles for a loss given up. But really, like, I mean, Washington State, there were multiple times last year where I'm like, ah, man, like, that was big addition by subtraction. Yeah. When you take a look at who left, right, the offensive coordinator and where he is now, where they just got rolled and smoked by Cal, yeah. Who like couldn't score 10 points or 13 points against Auburn. I mean, this is a better team. This is a better team on the offensive side, and they have a good defensive coordinator that is their head coach that happens to be their head coach. So this is another team that we thought would be at the bottom half of the Pac-12 that is quite good. And that's pretty interesting.
I think this is a defense first team still, though, right? Like, I think the defense is good.
Yeah.
I think the offense has improved. I'm not sure how much. That's the big question. Now, look, like, I mean, I think Mike Tressel and Luke Fickell are smart defensive minds, and Wisconsin's is going to have a pretty good defense, you know, compared to what they might see in the Pac-12 this season. But this was not this wasn't like Cam Ward's like coming out party, right? Like, he had a decent game, right? Like, they couldn't run the ball at all. And so it was really on Ward to be able to make it work. But the defense, I mean, I thought the defense really was quite good in this game. And that, I think, is like one of my big takeaways. Cause like, there's not that many teams that have good defenses in the league, and Washington State's defense might be enough to keep them in some games, especially cause like, man, there's some really bad defenses in this league that are going to let Washington State put up a bunch of points.
Yeah, they're going to go in. I mean, they have Northern Colorado, so we don't need to cover that, but they're going to go into conference play 3-0. And they're going to make a bowl, and they're going to be pretty solid. I'm excited to see Wazoo. And look, they got a chip on their shoulder, right? Like, after this game, you have the head coach, like Dickert, come out and say, like, we belong in a Power 5 conference. This is ridiculous. Like, and they do. Like, they have been consistently better than most of the teams that have moved on to Power 5 conferences. Yeah, absolutely. So, totally understand. By the way, Stanford plays Sacramento State. They could lose that game. I should just mention that. It's the awkward bowl. So you have the head coach jumping from the team that he's going to play to Stanford. So there's no line on that. But when it comes out, I want to take a look and see what it is, because I think it'll be interesting. Few more games to cover here, Rob. So let's talk UCLA 35, San Diego State 10. We basically said how many points is San Diego State going to score in this game, and the answer was none points. Now, I mean, they scored 10, yeah. But you know, look, it's not a great offense, but I mean, is UCLA's defense better? I think
they're better. I think they can get after you. You know, I think the front seven's not bad. I think the secondary is still bad. San Diego State's not going to, you're not going to find that. I mean, San Diego State's not going to exploit that, you know, for sure. But the story of the game was one, like, man, they ran the ball down San Diego State's throat, which I wasn't quite expecting. I mean, San Diego State's had a pretty good defense for a couple of years now. And like that I think was really impressive by UCLA. And of course, like the Dante Moore coming out party.
Yeah. So, I mean, keep a look at that. I'm curious to see how Moore continues. So he had 3 touchdowns. He was 17 for 27, 10 and a half, a little bit more than that per pass. So, which is great. Logan Loya is starting to emerge, and I think he's the freshman. So 7 to 77, he had a touchdown, 11 players caught a reception in this game. So he was slinging it around too, in addition to rushing. So, look, I think the thing to keep in mind is they played, right? Chip Kelly doesn't care about non-conference games. They dropped 35 on a really good offense, and they gave everybody who wanted the ball, got the ball. So that is really good news if you're a UCLA fan moving forward. They play
North Carolina A&M. Oh, yeah, it's another FCS team. Like, I think
North Carolina Central.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we can move on. But the real, like, I think this was a really good second game for UCLA. It kind of shows there, and I think they will continue to mature and also go into conference play at 3-0. Moving on here, Rob. In fact, let's take a quick break. We have a few more games to get to, and we'll get to them right after this. All right, we're back. Gotta talk Utah. Speaking of games that teams pull out of their hats, Utah 20, Baylor 13. It's so funny. I'm watching these games with my son, and as I was recording, I'm like, I'll put on a game for you so I can record. And he said, can I put on Baylor versus Utah? That was a good game. What the, like, sure.
It was, I mean, there was football played.
You nailed this at the beginning. Why on earth they, like, look, Bryson Barnes played the game of his life against Florida, and that the game of his life was like one touchdown, one pick, and like 200 yards. And they tried to ride that terrain into Baylor, and that didn't work out very well. We saw some wildcat here with Jaquindon Jackson, and then of course Nate Johnson. Right, you're right. Right when they turned to the rushing game, they started to pull away from this.
Yeah, I mean, like Utah. I mean, look, Baylor helped them out too. I mean, like Baylor, you know, had two turnovers. Utah only had the one. You know, and I mean, Baylor really at the end of the game, like, helped Utah stay in it. it was pretty ugly. Like, they needed that last pick, for sure. But what I really like was, you know, the emergence of Nate Johnson. And I think everyone, you know, like it was not working with Barnes, 3.7 per attempt. The running game wasn't bad with him in there, but like having Nate Johnson in there, it opens up the running game. It opens up the passing game. It made Baylor have to focus on somebody else. And frankly, like, let's be honest. I mean, like, I think the Barnes thing is it's kind of a tell. Like, if you don't have a quarterback that's also a little bit of a problem running, this offense may not work. Like, they don't actually have a lot of weapons. That was one of the main takeaways. Yeah. Is like Baylor was able to largely, like, Baylor's got a decent defense. Aranda's got a good scheme. He's a smart guy. Ron Roberts is his defensive coordinator. He's another good, you know, defensive mind. But it's not pretty. Like, the wide receivers were largely absent from this game. I mean, Money Parks had like some late catch that, you know, that sort of mattered, but they really need somebody in there. Like, I mean, and Rising is a run threat, and he's tough as nails, and he's a better quarterback, he's a better thrower than Barnes as well. But they need Rising back fast. Johnson's going to be an upgrade. He's going to open things up for him. But I think fundamentally they lack weapons. That's what sort of worries me about this Utah team going down the stretch. Is like, I think their margin for error, like, and their margin of, like, they took an injury, is really tight for this offense. And I know last year they dealt with a ton of injuries and they were still really successful. But I think people can shut this team down. Now, maybe not Pac-12 teams, but but like this is like, I mean, we talk about, like, I mean, like, last year Utah, like, faced some of the, I mean, like, Utah got to run through some of the worst defenses in the Pac-12, and we do expect them all to improve a little bit. That's sort of my concern. Like, this takeaway from this Baylor game, I was like, when I was watching it, I was like, this offense is really bad.
I think the thing to keep in mind, I agree that there are some pieces here. I do think that Devon Vele is pretty good. I don't know how long Keithy's going to be out, right? Like, cause he was supposed to be the replacement. I don't think the other tight ends behind him are good. So that's interesting. The couple things that stood out for me, that's
a real problem too, is like, they relied on tight ends, right? Like, you have to have the tight ends. They're going to help get other guys open, and that's not there. Like, they have, I mean, like, look, it can all change. You get Keithy back and Rising back and everything's fine, but without it, it's ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, you need somebody with some wheels to, like, really throw a wrinkle in this.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's totally the case. The couple interesting things for me, they let Nate Johnson throw a little bit in key moments, which I thought was, thank God, right? Because everybody was thinking, all right, Nate Johnson's going to run the ball. And like, he was able to move it just enough to get them over the hump. I liked that. I liked the use of Jackson. Look, Baylor's a tough place to play and is a good defensive coordinator. And like, that was a like, I thought the three for Nebraska was the trap. This was the trap where, I just thought that Utah was going to be able to run the ball better on the road. And they did, but they didn't at the same time. Right. Like, they did once they had to change the scheme, which good for them for doing. And that's why they win games. But I was not impressed with the running game, as much as I thought it was going to be in this matchup.
No. I mean, there was no threat of a passing game. I mean, that was part of it. I thought they did a really good job. Now, Baylor doesn't have a great offense, but I thought they did a really good. I mean, like, Utah showed up and did what they had to do on defense. Like, they shut them down. They had Sawyer Robertson is not a good quarterback, and Utah made him look like he was not a good quarterback. What I'm interested to see, like, was when we get to. And it's, you know, we're not going to see with Utah for a little bit. is when do we get to see them, you know, and see where this pass defense is this season, right? And we're not, I mean, UCLA is not going to do it. I mean, it's not going to be maybe until that game against USC that they really get tested against somebody. But I mean, Dante Moore is good enough to sling it around. You know, that UCLA game is all of a sudden looking really fun on the calendar.
Yeah, absolutely. Utah plays Weber State, you know, rest up, get ready for
Weber State's not a bad FCS team. So if this one was stupid for a while, I wouldn't be surprised. Oh. Now Utah's going to win it. But like this game could be stupid in the first half.
Oh, my gosh. That would be. Can you imagine? It's like 14-7 and you're like, oh, let's get into Salt Lake City where the Utah. Oh, Lord almighty.
Well, I mean, like I'm trying to remember. It was like a couple seasons ago. They were playing Weber State and like Weber State went into half like tied or something like that. It was like this hideous game. Like, oh,
it was like a Thursday opening night college football week one. Yeah, I remember that.
It was like it was like week one. It was dumb.
Let's talk Washington. Washington 43, Tulsa 10. I thought it was too many points, and it was too many points. And Tulsa only needed to score 10. I mean, that's how big the spread was on this one. Penix, you know, whatever, 409. I mean, in the best way possible, like that.
All the yards.
The ultimate compliment, be like, yeah, whatever. 400 yards, 3 touchdowns, whatever. Again, you almost had the trifecta of 100-yard wide receivers. So Polk was the weak link, Rob, with only 81 yards receiving in this game. McMillan and Odunze ended up.
The temerity.
Yeah. didn't run the ball very much again. I mean, they don't have to, but I just. You know, we're looking at some of the when you get into a tougher conference play, maybe you might need to do that. Probably not because their offense is so good. Defense gave up 168 yards rushing. Not great. They kept the passing plays to a minimum. I mean, they did what they needed to do. Like this game was over when it started and Washington continues to roll. I think they're going to be really good again. Like now they have Michigan State coming up, Rob, which has like some issues. Mel Tucker was. On the road with a coach to be determined, I guess. Mel Tucker out without pay for some sexual assault allegations. So there's not a line on this right now. I don't know.
Oh, I'll tell you what it opened at because they did have an opening line because that like from Circa. But I'm not sure. Like if they pulled the line, like I totally understand. It's it opened at 13. Which is right where Bedarank has it. I don't know. I mean, like they pull it for a reason because, like, you kind of don't know how Michigan State's going to react to this. Are they going to? I mean, like, not that you want. Like, I mean, Mel Tucker was sexually harassing rape survivor and advocate Brenda Tracy. So, like, not much to root for around your old coach there.
Start to rally around,
And like, I don't even think he disputes many of the facts of it. It's just like, but it's still hard to tell how Michigan State's going to react. Cause like this could go either way. Like they could show up and like want to show that, like, you know, that they can still play and, you know, win one for their teammates or something like that. And like, you know, they could do something crazy. I mean, I'd be surprised. The one thing I would say to keep an eye on, cause like I do expect Washington to fully win this game unless they turn the ball over 3 times. It's just to keep, like, you'd like to see Michigan State does not have a good offense. I didn't love the offensive coordinator hire. It's the same one that he had back at Colorado. You want to see Washington's defense actually kind of shut him down. Like Michigan State drove the ball a bit in the game last year and then like wasn't able to capitalize and like finish drives. Washington, you kind of like to see their defense actually like shut him down a little bit in this game.
Yeah. I think the other thing to keep in mind was Michigan State's secondary, as you recall last year, was hot garbage in the beginning. But they were riddled with injuries. So they got better as the second half rolled along. I still don't think the secondary is great, but I think that they were able to step on the gas a little bit more and not embarrass themselves. So, I'm curious how many points they're able to throw on, and you know, how many points are we going to get through the air for Washington? This is a tough game to like just think through. So I'm not going to make a pick on this because if it was 13, I'd probably take the 13, but like, you know, it's like,
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty fair. I mean, like Michigan State, you know, thus far this season, just bonkers. I mean, they haven't played anybody up to this point. They played Central Michigan and Richmond and beat both pretty badly, but both of the, I mean, Richmond's an FCS team, but Central Michigan's not terribly good. You know, like I mean, again, like Washington's offense should be able to put up a lot of points in this game. I think Michigan State has a really good defensive coordinator in Scotty Hazleton, but like, I don't think it's necessarily working with the personnel that they have right now. I'd like to, like, the main takeaway for me here is like, I really need to see Washington's defense actually like step in and shut them down, because Michigan State is pretty hapless on offense.
Yeah. Good call there. Was it Cal 10, Auburn 14 or whatever the heck that score was? Again, like on that game, it was just a lot of like Sam Jackson, you know, founding father, Samuel Jackson, they were able to run the ball. Like Jaden Ott got some time. Jackson was able to move it enough, but they could not, they could not close. And we had picks in the red zone, and it just,
yeah.
I think we'll see. We'll take a look. They play Idaho. So what are you going to do? But I think that you're going to end up with a, yeah, Northern Texas is really, really bad. And those 51 yes. yards were, yeah, good luck with that again. But I am curious to see how Jackson is able to move the ball against some weaker defense. Like, you know, if he racks up a ton of yards on the ground against Idaho, okay, like, I'm not going to get, like, no orange slices again, but I'm going to at least, I will look at that to see what we're able to do on the ground, particularly on his front, because he had some good throws. Like, there was a couple times where, like, oh wow, that was a good throw. And then there was a lot of throws I'm like, oh yep, that's why they were really panicked about it.
This is why he transferred from TCU, right? Like, this is very much who he was at TCU. Like, this game he was awful in this game in large parts, right? Like 14 of 27, 4.7 per with two picks. Like, that's a, I mean, even with some decent throws thrown in there, that's a brutal stat line, you know, in there. And like, Ott was fine. I mean, I don't think he had a lot of help, and like Auburn certainly knew what they had to cover, and they, you know, like he had some good runs mixed in there, but, you know, like I think this game was the, like the rumors of like Cal's big turnaround, like hit a wall on this one, right? Like I think Cal's better than they were last season, and I think that there's interesting, and I think that they definitely could continue to improve over the season, and I think that's going to be fun to watch. But this was ugly. I mean, Auburn's going to be bad this year. Like Auburn's, you should fully expect Auburn to get housed a couple times in SEC play.
And then, you know, when I said Jaden Ott got hit, I mean, like, hit 78 yards on 20 carries. It wasn't like, I saw a lot of him, but I didn't see.
There were some highlight runs where people were like, yeah. Jaden Ott. I mean, I had this game with the sound off because Brock Osweiler is like my least favorite color guy.
He's 6'7", Rob. You know that, right? Does he tell you that? Like, right? That was the stat every time.
They mentioned it all the time. I mean, I'm like, I'm tall. I don't tell everyone my height all the time. I mean, people ask a lot, but like, I don't go around telling everybody. Yeah. I mean, you remember when he was at Arizona State? They had him listed at like 6'8" or something like that. Like, because they always juice people's height on the roster.
7 feet tall.
Quarterback. They measured him in cleats. But I mean, like Auburn's offense, I mean, like, I think that one of the things, and I'm still interested to see, because like, look, Cal's defense last season took a step back, and they've kind of been trending in the wrong direction. Now they stabilized a little bit, but they haven't been great. And Auburn's offense is really bad. I mean, like Peyton Thorne and former Oregon Robbie Ashford got in some playing time. Like that's the part where it's like, I still feel like I need to see a little bit of, like, I mean, I feel like I got a little bit of an idea about Cal's offense in this game in an unfortunate way. The positive, if you're a Cal fan, is like, hey, the defense showed up, shut down an SEC offense. Hugh Freeze is a pretty good play caller. Yeah. But I don't think that this is like the most talented Auburn team. And I think they're really thin, and I think their quarterbacks are really bad. And that I think is gonna be like that part. I think, like, now look, Auburn could evolve over the season, you know, but like, I, you know, and we'll get an idea with this Cal team, right? Like where this defense is. But that's my main takeaway out of this one, is like, oh man, I think the offense is gonna have some good games against some really bad defenses in the Pac-12, but I don't think that they're I don't think they're going to keep up with anybody.
One saving grace here is there was a world, I think, where Auburn just runs it down Cal's throat and they get 200 yards in the offensive line. Like, it's not like Auburn hasn't been recruiting. I mean, it fell off with Harsin, but they still have been getting, they only had 136
players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would give like, you know, if we're doing the debits and credits, right? The credit, I think credit does go for the defense to hold that. I didn't think they were going to throw the ball at all, but like rushing the ball, I thought that was pretty impressive what they were able to do there.
Yeah. I mean, this game was so dumb. It had like 7 turnovers.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, part of why people are like, we're marching up and down the field, but there are very few points being scored.
The cheese it ball all over again. All right. Last game here. Oregon State is a 20.5 point favorite at home against San Diego State. For the first time in years, Rob, San Diego State will not have a chance to be the Pac-12 champion this year. So they're just,
everybody need to schedule BYU this year too.
They're just dishing out the L's. Oregon State just beat the tar out of an FCS team. We've seen them play one game against San Diego State.
San Jose State.
Would I say San Diego State?
Yeah, I mean, close.
Yeah, close. Different thing. I don't want to take all favorites, right? Like, but I don't think San Diego State's defense is good. Or offense, I'm sorry. I don't think San Diego State's offense is good. My apologies. That's not your facial expression when I said that.
No, but I'm with you. I think like the idea of their matchup against Oregon State's defense sounds horrible.
Yeah, and I think DJU is going to do enough to... I mean, I think they score 30... I mean... Is this offense as good as UCLA's offense with a freshman quarterback? I think so. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. That feels fair.
San Diego
State. I mean, that's their offense was, I mean, their offense was so bad.
It's Brady Hoke. I mean, like it's so weird because I think there's some teams we know who they are and we know who San Diego State is. Like, I know who Arizona is. I know who USC is. I know who San Diego State is. It's the same team every year. I'm going to take the Beavs. That's a lot of points, but I think they're going to be able to run the... That's the one thing. Are they going to be able to run the ball?
Yeah. Yeah. UCLA just ran the ball on them. Oregon State, with Jim Mihalchak, is going to run the ball on these guys. And DJU is going to hit his, like, 7-yard grinders. And I think San Diego State scores 3 points.
The other thing to keep in mind on these games is Childs, the backup quarterback, that guy balls. And when he comes in, like, they score. So just keep that in mind when the second half lines, or if you're betting live, like Childs comes in, it ain't over, man. Like that guy wants to be like, you know what? I understand that this a-hole in front of me is the starting quarterback, but I know what to do. Right. So just keep that in mind.
This is his moment to shine, right? Like he's the guy. And he's like, this is going to be my job one day and everyone is going to know it now.
Yep. Yep. Like, if Gulbranson comes in, like, he lights a couch on fire. That's the type of attitude I think he has, and I like it. I like it a lot.
I dig that. Yeah, I mean, I just think this is a bad... I mean, look, like, maybe San Diego State, like, bows up after getting waxed and embarrassed by UCLA, particularly because I think they have a lot of pride in that defense, and they got run on by UCLA. But I think the Beavs are going to run the ball down their throat. Like, if UCLA, I think these are the two best run schemes in the conference, and then two of the better offensive line coaching jobs in the conference. I like the Beavs to be able to do it. They're always good on the offensive line with Mihalchak.
The run and shoot offense against Oregon's defense. I'm just rethinking that pick. Yeah, that is for another time. We've been recording for an hour and a half.
You're rethinking. My mind's wait, the run and shoot. Who's Oregon playing again?
Hawaii.
Oh,
they're rocking the run and shoot.
I don't know that game. I mean, that game is so... I'm taking Hawaii in that game because I just think it's a lot. I think it's so many points, and they're going to be like, "Nope, Colorado's coming in. Game day is going to be here. We're not doing this."
Oh, pack it in. Yeah, dang. Okay.
That's my only thought on it is just like, it feels like a lot of points to hit. It's going to be one of those ones where like, there's going to be a lot of people with money on. It feels like one of those ones where there's going to be a lot of people on with money on Oregon, like just praying that Ty Thompson, like just gets greedy. Oh, like,
I just don't want to be there. All right. I'm going with Hawaii. I can't in good conscience. It's going to be the USC game all over again. What am I doing? I just watched this game. I watched this game like 2 hours ago.
Whatever. Because you don't want. I mean, it's weird because like Ty Thompson was like the 5-star all world recruit that they nailed. But if you're like needing USC, like you want Malachi Nelson coming in to be like have his like hello world moment, right? You like,
yeah.
That's what you needed against Stanford, not Miller Moss.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, to be fair, that Stanford did not cover and USC covered that game, but I got you. Okay. All right. We're done. That's it for this week. We're going to get to conference play. It's going to be a lot lighter show. Thank God. And we're excited about
there.
It.
I mean, like almost there. Oh,
thanks for bearing with us. We're working our way through. I got half these teams down now, so I'm pretty excited to see what one more data point is for each of them. 12-pack radio, Sharp College Football. Rob's doing the Saturday 6, and he's probably all FCS games.
Oh my God, it's this brutal week. This week. I was like, I think I have Tennessee, Florida, and I'm like, this isn't going to be a great game. I mean, Vegas has it fairly close. Beta Rank has it fairly close, but I think that's mostly Florida projection. Although, oh man, like Joe Milton has not been great so far in that Heupel offense.
He's got an arm around him. He's going to throw it right at your head.
Through me. Like he could throw it. He could like, they'd just be like, it'd be like a cartoon. There'd be like a hole. And
all right, everybody. We will talk to you next week for conference season.